Hi, this is LB again, and we are ready to start chapter 2. And as a grown-ish adult, here we go. Okay, chapter 2. Three old ladies knit the socks of death. I was used to occasional weird experiences, but usually they were over quickly. This 24/7 hallucination was more than I could handle. For the rest of the school year, the entire campus seemed to be playing some kind of trick on me. The kids act as if they were The kids acted as if they were completely and totally. The students acted as if they were completely and totally convinced that Mrs. Kerr, a perky blonde woman who I'd never seen in my life until she got on our bus at the end of the field trip, had been our pre-algebra teacher since Christmas. Every so often, I would spring a Mrs. Dodds reference on somebody, just to see if I could trip them up, but they all stared at me like I was psycho. It got so that I believed them. Mrs. Dodds had never existed. Almost. But Grover couldn't fool me. When I mentioned the name Dodds to him, he would hesitate, then claim she didn't exist. But I knew he was lying. Something was going on. Something had happened at the museum. I didn't have much time to think about it during the days, but at nights, visions of Mrs. Dodds with talons and leathery wings would wake me up in a cold sweat. The freaky weather continued. It didn't help my mood. One night, a thunderstorm blew out the windows into my dorm room. A few days later, the biggest tornado ever spotted in the Hudson Valley touched down only 50 miles from Yancey Academy. One of the current events we studied in social studies class was the unusual number of small planes that had gone down in a sudden squall in the Atlantic that year. I started to feel cranky and irritated most of the time. My grades slipped from D's to F's. I got into more fights with Nancy, Bobofit, and her friends. And I went out into the hallway in almost every class. Finally, when our English teacher, Mr. Nickel, asked me for the millionth time why I was too lazy to study for spelling tests, I snapped. I called him an old sot. I wasn't even sure what it meant, but it sounded good. The headmaster sent me and my mother a letter the following week, making it official. I would not be invited back next year to Yancey Academy. Fine, I told myself. Just fine. I was homesick. I wanted to be with my mom in our little apartment on the Upper East Side, even if I had to go to public school and put up with my obnoxious stepfather and his stupid poker fights, parties. And yet, there were things I miss about Yancey. The view of the woods out of my dorm room window, the Hudson River in the distance, the smell of pine trees. I'd miss Grover, who'd been a good friend, even if he was a little strange. I worried how he would survive next year without me. I missed Latin class, too. Mr. Bunner's crazy tournament days and his faith that I could do well. An exam week got closer. Latin was the only test I studied for. I hadn't forgotten what Mr. Bunner had told me about this subject being life and death for me. I wasn't sure why, but I had started to believe him. The evening before my final, I got so frustrated, I threw the Cambridge Guide to Greek Mythology across my dorm room. Words had started swimming off the page, circling my head, the letters doing 180s as if they were riding skateboards. There was no way I was going to remember the difference between Chiron and Charon, and Pleiodix and Pleiodeuces, and congregating those Latin verbs. Forget it. I paced the room feeling like ants were crawling around inside my shirt. I remembered Mr. Brunner's serious expression, his thousand-year-old eyes. I will accept only the best from you, Percy Jackson. I took a deep breath. I picked up my mythology book. I'd never asked a teacher for help before. Maybe if I had talked to Mr. Brunner, he'd give me some pointers. At least I could apologize for the big fat F I was about to score on his exam. I didn't want to leave Yancey Academy with him thinking I hadn't tried. I walked downstairs to the faculty offices. Most of them were dark and empty, but Mr. Bunner's door was ajar, light from his window stretching across the hallway floor. I was three steps from the door handle when I heard voices inside the office. Mr. Bunner asked a question, a voice that was definitely Grover said, "Worried about Percy, sir?" I froze. I'm not usually an eavesdropper, but I dare you to try not listening if you hear your best friend talking about you to an adult. I inched closer. Alone this summer, Grover was saying. I mean, I kindly won in the school. Now that we know for sure, and they know too.
We would only make matters worse by rushing him, Mr. Bunner said. We need the boy to mature more.
But he may not have time. The summer solstice deadline.
Will have to be resolved without him, Grover. Let him enjoy his ignorance while he still can.
Sir, he saw her.
His imagination, Mr. Bunner insisted.
The mist over the staff and students will be enough to convince him of that. Sir, I can't fail in my duties again. Grover's voice was choked with emotion. You know what that would mean.
You haven't failed, Grover, Mr. Bunner said kindly.
I would have seen her for what she was.
Now let's just worry about keeping Percy alive until next fall.
The mythology book dropped out of my hand and hit the floor with a thud. Mr. Bunner went silent, my heart hammering. I picked up the book and backed down the hall. A shadow slid across the slated glass of Bunner's office door. The shadow of something taller than my wheelchair-bound teacher, holding something that looked suspiciously like an arrow's bow. I opened the nearest door and slipped inside. A few seconds later, I heard a slow clop, 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 like muffled wooden blocks that sounded like an animal scuffling right outside my door. A large, dark shape passed in front of the glass, then moved on. A bead of sweat trickled from down my neck. Nowhere in the hallway, Mr. Bunner spoke.
Nothing, he murmured. My nerves haven't been right since the winter solstice.
Mine either, Grove said, but I could have sworn.
Go back to your dorm, Mr. Bunner told him. You've got a long day of exams tomorrow.
Don't remind me. The light went out in Mr. Bunner's office. I waited in the door for dark for what seemed like forever. Finally, I slipped out into the hallway and made my way back to the dorm. Grover was lying on his bed, studying his Latin exam notes, like he had been there all night. Hey, he said, bleary-eyed. You're going to be ready for this test? I didn't answer. You look awful, he frowned. Is everything okay?
Just tired.
I turned so he couldn't read my expression and started getting ready for bed. I didn't understand what I heard downstairs. I wanted to believe I'd imagined the whole thing, but the other one thing was clear. Grover and Mr. Bunner were talking about me behind my back. They thought I was in some kind of danger. The next afternoon, I was leaving the 3-hour Latin exam, my eyes swimming with all the Greek and Roman names I misspelled. Mr. Bunner called me back inside. For a moment, I was worried he found out about my eavesdropping the night before, but it didn't seem to be the problem. Percy, he said,
don't be discouraged about leaving Yancey. It's for the best.
His tone was kind, but the words seemed embarrassing me. Even though he was speaking quietly, the other kids finished their tests could hear. Nancy Bobovitz smirked at me and made sarcastic little kissing motions with her lips. I mumbled, okay, sir.
I mean,
Mr. Bunner wheeled his chair back and forth like he wasn't sure what to say.
This isn't the place for you. It's only a matter of time.
My eyes stung. Here was my favorite teacher in front of the class telling me I couldn't handle it. After saying he believed in me all year, now he's telling me I was destined to get kicked out.
Right, I mumbled.
No, I'm confounded all. What I'm trying to say is you're not normal, Percy. That's nothing to be...
Thanks, I blurted out. Thanks a lot for reminding me. Percy, but I was already gone.
On the last day of term, I shoved my clothes into my suitcase. The other guys were joking around me, talking about their vacation plans. One of them was going on a hike trip to Switzerland. Another was cruising the Caribbean for a month. They were juvenile delinquents, like me, but they were rich juvenile delinquents. Their daddies were executives or ambassadors or celebrities. I was a nobody from a family of nobodies. They asked me what I was doing this summer, and I told them I was going back to the city. What I didn't tell them was that I'd have to get a summer job walking dogs or selling magazine subscriptions or spending my free time worrying about where I was going to go to school in the fall.
Oh, one of the boys said, that's cool.
They went back to their conversation as if I never existed. The only person I dreaded saying goodbye to was Grover. but as it turned out, I didn't have to. He'd booked a ticket to Manhattan on the same Greyhound as I had, so they were together again, heading into the city. During the whole bus ride, Grover kept glancing nervously down the aisle, watching the other passengers. It occurred to me that he's always acted nervous and fidgety when we left Yancey, but if he expected something bad to happen before, I always assumed he was worried about getting teased. But there was nobody to tease him on the Greyhound. Finally, I couldn't stand it anymore. I said, "Looking for kindly ones?" Grover nearly jumped out of his seat. "What? What do you mean?" I confessed about eavesdropping on him and Mr. Bunner the night before the exam. Grover's eyes twitched. "How much did you hear?" "Oh, not much. What's the summer solstice deadline?" He winced. "Look, Percy, I'm just worried about you, you see? I mean, hallucinating about demon math teachers?" "Grover, I was telling Mr. Bunner that maybe you were overstressed or something because there's no such person as Mrs. Dodds and..." "Grover, you really, really bad liar." His ears turned pink. From the shirt pocket, he fished out a grubby business card. "Just take this, okay? In case you need me this summer." The card was in fancy script, which was murder on my dyslexic eyes. But I finally made out something like, "Grover Underwood, Keeper, Half Blood Hill, Long Island, New York, 800-009-0009. "What's half?" "Don't say it aloud," he yelled. "This is my, summer address." My heart sank. Grover had a summer home. I never considered that his family might be as rich as the others at Yancey. "Okay," I grumbled. "So, like, if I want to come visit your mansion?" He nodded. Or if you need me." "Why would I need you?" It came out harsher than I meant it to. Grover blushed right down to his Adam's apple. "Look, Percy, the truth is, I'm kind of, have to protect you." I stared at him. "All year long, I've gotten into fights, keeping bullies away from him. I'd lost sleep worrying that he'd get beaten up next year without me. And here he is acting like he was one who defended me." "Grover," I said, "what exactly are you protecting me from?" There was a huge grinding noise under our feet. Black smoke poured from the dashboard, and the whole bus filled with smell like rotten eggs. The driver cursed and limped the Greyhound over to the side of the highway. A few moments later, clanking around in the engine compartment, the driver announced that we would all have to get off. Grover and I filed outside with everybody else. We were on a stretch of country road, no place you'd notice if you didn't break down there. On our side of the highway was nothing but maple trees and litter from passing cars. On the other side, across the four lanes of asphalt shimmering with afternoon heat, was an old-fashioned fruit stand. The stuff on sale looked really good. Heaping boxes of blood red cherries and apples, walnuts and apricots, jugs of cider, and a clawfoot tub full of ice. There was no customers, just three old ladies sitting in rocking chairs in a shade of a maple tree, knitting the biggest pair of socks I'd ever seen. I mean, those socks were the size of sweaters, but they were clearly socks. The lady on the right sock knitted one of them. The lady on the left knitted the other. The lady in the middle had an enormous basket of electric ball blue yarn. All three ladies looked ancient, with pale faces wrinkled like fruit leather, silver hair tied back in white bandanas, bony arms sticking out of bleached cotton dresses. The strangest, weirdest thing was, they seemed to be looking right at me. I looked over at Grover to say something about this and saw that the blood had drained from his face. His nose was twitching. "Grover," I said. "Hey, man. Tell me they're not looking at you. They are, aren't they?" "Yeah. Weird, huh? To think those socks would fit me." "Not funny, Percy. Not funny at all." The old lady in the middle took out a huge pair of scissors, gold and silver, long blade like shears, and I heard Grover catch his breath. "We're getting on the bus," he told him. "Come on." "What?" "It's 1,000 degrees in there." "Come on." He pried open the door and climbed inside, but I stayed back. Across the road, the old ladies were still watching me. The middle one cut the yarn. I swear I could hear the snip across four lanes of traffic. Her two friends balled up the electric blue socks. leaving me wondering who they could possibly be for Squadits or Godzilla. At the rear of the bus, the driver wrenched a big chunk of smoking metal out of the engine compartment. The bus shuddered and the engine roared back to life. The passengers cheered. "Darn right," yelled the driver. He slapped the bus and "Everybody back on board." Once we got going, I started feeling feverish, as if I'd caught the flu. Grover didn't look much better. He was shivering and his teeth were chattering.
"Grover."
"Yeah?"
"What are you not telling me?"
He dashed his forehead with his shirt sleeve. "Percy, what did you see back at the fruit stand?"
"You mean the old ladies?"
"What is it about them, man? It's not like Mrs. Dodds, are they?" His expression was hard to read, but I got the feeling the fruit stand ladies were something much, much worse than Mrs. Dodds. He said, "Just tell me what you saw." The middle one took out her scissors and she cut the yarn. He closed his eyes and made a gesture with his finger that might have been crossing himself, but it wasn't. It was something else, something almost older. He said, "You saw her snip the cord."
"Yeah, so?"
But even as I said it, I knew it was a big deal.
"This is not happening,"
Grover mumbled. He started chewing on his thumb. "I didn't want this to be like the last time."
"What last time?"
"Always sixth grade. They never get past six."
"Grover," I said, because he was really starting to scare me. "What are you talking about?"
"Let me walk you home from the bus station. Promise me." This seemed like a strange request to me, but I promised he could.
"Is this like superstition or something?" I asked.
No answer.
"Grover,
that snipping of the yarn, does that mean someone is gonna die?" And he looked at me mournfully, like he was already picking the kind of flowers I'd like best on my coffin. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chapter 3 of The Lightning Thief by Rick Riordan. Grover unexpectedly loses his pants. Confession time. I ditched Grover as soon as we got to the bus terminal. I know. It was rude. But Grover was freaking me out, looking at me like I was a dead man, muttering, "Why does this always happen? And why does this always have to be sixth grade?" Whenever he got upset, Grover's bladder acted up. So I wasn't surprised when, as soon as we got off the bus, he made me promise to wait for him, then made a beeline for the restroom. Instead of waiting, I got my suitcase, slipped outside, and caught the first taxi uptown. 8104th and 1st, I told the driver. "A word about my mother, before you meet her. Her name is Sally Jackson. She's the best person in the world, which just proves my theory that the best people have the rotten luck. Her own parents died in a plane crash when she was 5. She was raised by an uncle who didn't care about much about her. She wanted to be a novelist, so she spent high school working to save enough money for college for a good creative writing program. Then, her uncle got cancer. She had to quit school her senior year to take care of him. After he died, she was left with no money, no family, and no diploma. The only good break she ever got was beating my dad. I don't have any memories of him, just the sort of warm glow, maybe the barest trace of his smile. My mom doesn't like to talk about him because it makes her sad. She's has no pictures. See, they weren't married. She told me he was rich and important, and their relationship was a secret. Then one day, he set sail across the Atlantic on some important journey and never came back. Lost at sea, my mom told me. Not dead. Lost at sea. She worked odd jobs, took night classes to get her high school diploma, and raised me on her own. She never complained or got mad, not even once, but I knew I wasn't an easy kid. Finally, she married Gabe Aglano. He was nice the first 30 seconds we knew him, then showed his true colors as the world-class jerk. When I was young, I nicknamed him Smelly Gabe. I'm sorry, but it's the truth. The guy reeked like moldy garlic pizza wrapped in gym shorts. Between the two of us, we made my mom's life pretty hard. The way Smelly Gabe treated her, the way he and I got along. Well, when I came home, is a good example. I walk into our little apartment, hoping my mom would be home from work. Instead, Smelly Gabe was in the living room playing poker with his buddies. The television blared ESPN. Chips and beer cans were strewn all over the carpet. Hardly looking up, he said around his cigar,
So you're home. Where's my mom? Working, he said. Got cash? That was it. No, welcome back. Good to see you. How has your life been the last 6 months? Gabe had put on weight. He looked like a tuckless walrus in a thrift store clothes. He was about 3 hairs on his head, all combed over his bald scalp, as if that made him handsome or something. He managed an electronic mega mart in Queens, but he stayed home most of the time. I don't know why he hasn't been fired long before. He just kept on collecting paychecks, spending the money on cigars that made me nauseous, and on beer, of course. Always beer. Whenever I was home, he expected me to provide his gambling funds. He called that our guy secret, meaning if I told my mom, he would punch my lights out. I don't have any cash, I told him. He raised a greasy eyebrow. Gabe could sniff out money like a bloodhound, which was surprising since his own smell should have covered up everything else. He took a taxi from the bus station, he said. Probably paid with a 20. Got 6-7 bucks in change. Somebody expects to live under this roof. He ought to carry on his weight. Ain't I right, Eddie? Eddie, the super of the apartment building, looked at me with a twinge of sympathy. Come on, Gabe, he said. The kids just got here. All right, Gabe repeated. Eddie scowled into his bowl of pretzels. The other two guys passed gas in harmony. Fine, I said. I dug a wad of dollars out of my pocket and threw the table on the money off the table. I hope you lose. Your report card came, brain boy, he shouted after me. I wouldn't act so snooty. I slammed the door to my room, which really wasn't my room. During school months, it was Gabe's study. He didn't study anything in there except old car magazines, but he loved shoving my stuff into a closet, leaving his muddy boots on my windowsill, and doing his best to make the place smell like his nasty cologne, cigars, and stale beer. I dropped my suitcase on the bed. Home sweet home. Gabe's smell was almost worse than the nightmare about Mrs. Dodds or the sound of the old fruit lady's shears snipping the yarn, but as soon as I thought that, my legs felt weak. I remembered Grover's look of panic, how he made me promise I wouldn't go home without him. A sudden chill rolled through me. I felt like someone, something, was looking for me right now, maybe pounding its way up the stairs, growing longer, horrible talons. Then I heard my mom's voice. Percy! She opened the bedroom door and my fears melted. My mother could make me feel good just by walking into the room. Her eyes sparkle and change color in the light. Her smile is warm as a quilt. She's got a few gray streaks mixed in with her long brown hair, but I never think of her as old. When she looks at me, it's like she's seeing all the good things about me, none of the bad. I never heard her raise her voice or say any unkind word to anyone, not even me or Gabe. Oh, Percy, she hugged me tight. I can't believe it. You've grown since Christmas. Her red, white, and blue sweet, oh, American uniform smelled like the best thing in the world. Chocolate, licorice, and all the other stuff she sold at the candy shop in Grand Central. She brought me a big bag of free samples, the way she always did when I came home. We sat together on the edge of the bed while I attacked the blueberry sour strings. She ran her hands through my hair, demanding to know everything I hadn't put in my letters. She didn't mention anything about me getting expelled. She didn't seem to care about that. But was I okay? Was her little boy doing all right? I told her she was smothering me to lay off and all that, but secretly, I was really, really glad to see her. From the other room, Gabe yelled, "Hey, Sally! How about some bean dip, huh?" I gritted my teeth. My mom is the nicest lady in the world. She should have been married to a millionaire, not some jerk named Gabe. For her sake, I tried to sound upbeat about my last days at Yancey Academy. I told her I wasn't down about the expulsion. I'd lasted almost the whole year this time. I'd made some new friends. I'd done pretty well in Latin. And honestly, the fights hadn't been as bad as the headmaster said. I liked Yancey Academy. I really did. I put such a good spin on the year, I almost convinced myself. I started choking up, thinking about Grover and Mr. Bunner. Even Nancy Bobo Fitz suddenly didn't seem so bad, until the trip to the museum. What? My mom asked. Her eyes tugged at the conscious, trying to pull out the secrets. Did something scare you? No, Mom. I felt bad lying. I wasn't about to tell her Mrs. Dodds and the three old ladies about the yarn, but I thought it would sound stupid. She pursed her lips. She knew I was holding back, but she didn't push me. I have a surprise for you, she said. We're going to the beach. My eyes widened. Montauk? 3 nights, same cabin. When? She smiled. As soon as I get changed. I couldn't believe it. My mom and I hadn't been to Montauk the last 2 summers because Gabe said there wasn't enough money. Gabe appeared in the door and growled, Bean dip, Sally. Didn't you hear me? I wanted to punch him, but I met my mom's eyes and I understood she was offering me a deal. Be nice to Gabe for a little while until she was ready to leave for Montauk. Then we would get out of here. I was on my way, honey, she said to Gabe. We were just talking about the trip. Gabe's eyes got small. The trip? You mean you're serious about that? I knew it, I muttered. He won't let us go. Of course he will, my mom said eventually. Your stepfather is just worried about money, that's all. Besides, she added, Gabriel won't have to settle for bean dip. I made him enough 7-layer dip for the whole weekend. Guacamole, sour cream, the works. Gabe softened a bit. So this money for your trip, it's coming out of your clothes budget, right? Yes, honey, my mother said. And you won't take my car anywhere but there and back. We'll be very careful. Gabe scratched his double chin. Well, if you hurry with that 7-layer dip, and maybe if this kid apologized for interrupting my poker game. Maybe if I kick you in the soft spot, I thought, and make you sing soprano for a week. But my mom's eyes warned me not to make him mad. Why did she put up with this guy? I wanted to scream. Why did she care what he thought? I'm sorry, I muttered. I'm really sorry for interrupting your incredibly important poker game. Please go back to it right now. Gabe's eyes narrowed. His tiny brain was trying to detect sarcasm in my statement. Yeah, whatever, he decided. He went back to his game. Thank you, Percy, my mom said. Once we get to Montauk, we'll talk more about whatever you forgot to tell me, okay? For a moment, I thought I saw anxiety in her face. The same fear I'd seen in Grover's during the bus ride, as if my mom too felt an odd chill in the air. But then her smile returned, and I figured I must have been mistaken. She ruffled my hair and went to make Gabe his 7-layer dip. An hour later, we were ready to go. Gabe took a break from his poker game long enough to watch me lug my mom's bags to the car. He kept gurgling and groaning about losing her cooking, and more important, his 78 Camaro for the whole weekend. Not a scratch on that car, brain boy, he warned me at the load of the last bag. Not one little scratch. Like I'd be the one driving, I was 12. But I didn't matter to Gabe. If a seagull so much as pooped on his paint job, he'd find a way to blame me. Watching him lumber back to the apartment building, I got so mad I did something I can't explain. As Gabe reached the doorway, I made the hand gesture I'd seen Grover make on the bus. A sort of warding off evil gesture, a claw hand over my throat, then a shove motion towards Gabe. The screen door slammed shut so hard it whacked him in the butt and sent him flying up the staircase, as if he had been shot from a cannon. Maybe it was just the wind or some freak accident with the hinges, but I didn't take long enough to find out. I got in the Camaro and told Mom to step on it. Our rental cabin was the South Shore, way out of the tip of the Long Island. It was a little pastel box with faded curtains half sunken into the dunes. There was always sand in the sheets and spiders in the cabinets. Most of the time, the sea was too cold to swim in. I loved the place. We'd been going there since I was a baby. My mom had been going even longer. She never exactly said, but I knew why the beach was special to her. It was the place where she met my dad. As we got closer to Montauk, she seemed to grow younger, years of worry and work disappearing from her face. Her eyes turned to the color of the sea. We got there at sunset, opened all the cabin windows, went through our usual cleaning routine. We walked on the beach, fed blue corn chips to the seagulls, munched on blue jelly beans, blue saltwater taffy, and all the other free samples my mom had brought from work. I guess I should explain the blue food. See, Gabe had once told my mom that there was no such thing. They had this fight, which seemed like a really small thing at the time, but ever since, my mom went out of her way to eat blue. She baked blue birthday cakes, mixed blueberry smoothies, she bought blue corn tortilla chips, and brought home blue candy from the shop. This, along with keeping her maiden name Jackson, rather than calling herself Mrs. Ugliano. was proof that she wasn't totally suckered by Gabe. She did have a rebellious streak like me. When it got dark, we made a fire. We roasted hot dogs and marshmallows. Mom told me stories about when she was a kid before her parents died in the plane crash. She told me about the book she wanted to write someday when she had enough money to quit the candy shop. Eventually, I got up the nerve to ask about what was always on my mind whenever we came to Montauk. My father. Mom's eyes went all misty. I decided she would tell me the same thing she always did, but I never got tired of hearing them. He was kind, Percy. Tall, handsome, and powerful, but gentle too. You have his black hair, you know, and his green eyes. Mom fished a blue jelly bean out of the candy bag. I wish he could see you, Percy. He'd be so proud. I wonder how she could say that. What was so great about me? A dyslexic, hyperactive boy with a D+ report card kicked out of school for the sixth time in 6 years. How old was I? I said. When he left. She watched the flames. He was only with me for one summer, Percy, right here at this beach, this cabin. But he knew me as a baby. No, honey. He knew I was expecting a baby, but he never saw you. He had to leave before you were born. I tried to square that fact that I seemed to remember something about my father. A warm glow, a smile. I had always assumed he knew me as a baby. My mom had never said it outright. But still, I felt it would be true. Now, to be told that he'd never seen me. I felt angry at my father. Maybe it's stupid, but I resented him for going on that ocean voyage, for not having the guts to marry my mom. He left us, and now we're stuck with smelly Gabe. Are you going to send me away again? I asked her. To another boarding school? She pulled a marshmallow from the fire. I don't know, honey. Her voice was heavy. I think we'll have to do something. Because you don't want me around? I regretted the words as soon as they came, as they were out. My mom's eyes welled with tears. I took her hand, squeezed it tight. Oh, Percy, no, I have to. Honey, for your own good, I have to send you away. Her words reminded me of what Mr. Bunner had said, that this was best for me to leave Yancey. Because I'm not normal? He said, I said. You say that it is a bad thing, Percy, but you don't realize how important you are. I thought Yancey Academy would be far enough away. I thought you'd finally be safe. Safe from what? She met my eyes, and a flood of memories came back to me. All the weird, scary things that had ever happened to me. Some of the things I had tried to forget. During third grade, a man in a black trench coat had stalked me on the playground. When teachers threatened to call the police, he went away growling. But no one believed me when I told him that under his broad brim hat, the man had one eye right in the middle of his head. Before that, a really early memory. I was in preschool and a teacher accidentally put me down for a nap in a cot that a snake had slithered into. My mom screamed when she came to pick me up and found me playing with a limp, scaly rope, but I somehow managed to strangle to death with my meaty toddler hands. In every single school, something creepy had happened, something unsafe, and I was forced to leave. I knew I shouldn't tell her about the old ladies at the fruit stand and Mrs. Dodds at the art museum about my weird hallucination that I had sliced my math teacher into dust with a sword, but I couldn't make myself tell her. I had a strange feeling the news would end our trip to Montauk, and I didn't want that. I tried to keep you close to me as I could, my mom said. They told me that was a mistake. But there's only one other option, Percy, the place your father wanted to send you. I just can't do it. My father wanted me to go to a special school. Not a school, she said softly. A summer camp. My head was spinning. Why would my dad, who hadn't even stayed long enough to see me born, talk to my mom about a summer camp? And if it was so important, why hadn't she ever mentioned it before? I'm sorry, Percy, she said, looking into my eyes. But I can't talk about it. I couldn't send you to that place. It might mean saying goodbye to you for good. For good? But it's only a summer camp. She turned to the fire, and I knew from her expression that if I asked her any more questions, she would start crying. That night, I had a vivid dream. It was a storming on the beach, and two beautiful animals, a white horse and a golden eagle, were trying to kill each other on the edge of the surf.
The eagle swooped down to slash the horse's muzzle with its huge talons. The horse reared up and kicked the eagle at the eagle's wings. And they fought. The ground rumbled, and a monstrous voice chuckled. Somewhere beneath the earth, goading the animals to fight harder, I ran towards them, knowing I had to stop them from killing each other. But I was running in slow motion. I knew I would be too late. I saw the eagle dive down, its beak aimed at the horse's wide eyes, and I screamed, "No!" I woke with a start. Outside, it really was storming, the kind of storm that cracked trees and blow down houses. There was no horse or eagle on the beach, just lightning, making false daylight, and 20-foot waves pounding the dunes like artillery. With the next thunderclap, my mom woke. She sat up with eyes wide and said, "Hurricane!" I knew that was crazy. Long Island never seen hurricanes this early in the summer, but the ocean seemed to have forgotten. Over the roar of the wind, I heard a distant bellow, an angry, tortured sound that made my hair stand on end. Then a much closer noise, like mallets in the sand, a desperate voice, someone yelling, pounding on our cabin door. My mom sprang out of bed in her nightgown and threw open the lock. Grover stood framed in the doorway against a backdrop of pouring rain, but he wasn't exactly Grover. "Searching all night," he gasped. "Where were you thinking?" My mother looked at me in terror, not scared of Grover, but why he'd come. "Percy," he said, shouting to be heard over there. "What happened at school? What didn't you tell me?" I was frozen, looking at Grover. I couldn't understand what I was seeing. "Azu kai aloi theo," he yelled. "It's right behind me. Didn't you tell her?" I was too shocked to register that he just cursed in ancient Greek, and I understood him perfectly. I was too shocked to understand how Grover hadn't gotten him here by himself in the middle of the night, because Grover didn't have his pants on, and where his legs should be. My mom looked at me sternly and talked in a tone she'd never used before. "Percy, tell me now." I stammered something about old ladies at a fruit stand and Mrs. Dodds, and my mom stared at me, her face deathly pale in the flashing lighting. She grabbed her purse, tossed me my rain jacket, and said, "Get in the car, both of you. Go." Grover ran to the Camaro. He wasn't running exactly. He was trotting, shaking his shaggy hindquarters, and suddenly his story about muscular disorder in his legs made sense to me. I understood how he could run so fast and still limp when he walked, because where his feet should be, there were no feet. They were cloven hooves.